two smart women, one that will watch anything.
And the other that has a more discerning taste.
Sit down to watch and discuss the ever-growing medium of streaming TV.
We're the Streaming Smarties.
So, welcome back to Streaming Smarties. Oh, great. My brain's on vacation again today.
Do you remember what the name of the show is? We have the show. Let me just take you back a little bit in the Wayback Machine. We've got this show called Streaming Smarties.
My brain has been taking a vacation lately. I blame it on my concussion.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. That was so long ago. That is also in the Wayback Machine.
It was 2 weeks ago, Robin.
I know, but April has been such a long month.
What a year this month has been.
What a year this month has been.
Go on.
Yeah, so we're back. And we are, this week we're attending to the title of episode 8 is The Jewish Question. Well, I've got some thoughts about this episode, but we're going to first take a moment. We have our first guest that we've invited to be on the show with us this evening to attend to the Jewish question. He's well known on the Random Chatter Network and pretty well known in my life, I think. We've got Tim with us of Guardians of the MCU fame and Echo Base fame. Yes. Anything else?
Random Chatter. Dispatches from the Front. Behind the Curtain.
So he's here.
Trailer Breakdown.
He's here on Streaming Smarties. Welcome, Tim.
Yes, I am here. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. I'm honored to be your first guest. And obviously, Robin and I have been watching Hunters together, and I'm really thrilled to be talking about it.
Yeah, so
love the show. Long time listener, first time caller.
It was Joe from Philly.
It was Joe from Philly. April and I were trying to figure out today who you were on.
Oh yeah, Joe from Philly. I remember that guy. That guy was awesome.
Yeah, I hope that guy never calls into this show.
Well, that's really easy. We just have to have a phone number for this show.
There you go. There you go. All right. So, let's dig in, shall we?
So,
what do you think overall about this?
So, I rewatched this episode this afternoon because it has been over a month since I watched it. And I was immediately hit with the fact that it opens up with a song that I really like, Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. And it's juxtaposed with Jonah roaming throughout New York City during the blackout and being blamed for the deaths of Ruth, Murray, and Arthur.
Being harassed by his conscience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or spirits of people. You don't know.
Yes. Yes, we do know, because Murray does not blame him.
That's true. That is true.
And neither does his grandmother we don't know about his buddy Booty, but we know that his grandmother, no grandmother ever blames their grandchild for anything ever in the history of the world.
True.
Especially, Jewish grandmothers and Italian grandmothers, they're cut from the same cloth of your grandchildren can do nothing wrong, and whatever your parents think you did wrong, they're the ones that are wrong. So,
yes, the minute an Italian woman becomes a grandmother, she becomes a saint.
She loses all reason when it comes to her grandchildren.
So, of course, we are now... Jonah is being visited by now more people, right? As his conscience plagues him for the deaths that are occurring around him. I have some pretty strong feelings about this episode, so I want to sort of hear both Apes, you and Tim, give us just an overall impression of the feel of this episode.
Go ahead, Tim. You're our guest.
Well, you know, obviously this episode was a big buildup, and it was interesting because how it started was obviously in the middle of the blackout and the riots and all that. And so we were dealing with individuals on a very personal basis, but within the scope of something that was not within their control. And it was just kind of this bigger thing. But then the story really started to unfold a lot more. And we realized what it was building up to. As we start to get a little bit more information about this corporation and about what the corporation was doing and the role of the colonel and all that. And so as you know, of course, we're along for the ride with the characters, and we're learning about things as they are. And again, just kind of this whole buildup that is ready to unveil itself in the next episode.
Yeah, so I actually like this episode strictly because it's very self-contained. You know, when I was watching it today, it felt very short just because there was so much stuff that was happening, but everything came together very quickly. Mm-hmm. I think it's a well done episode. I don't think it's the best episode. I do, however, love that we're starting to finally get badass Jonah. Like, he's been wishy-washy this whole time, and now all of a sudden the light like turns off. Like, he no longer has this light in his eyes. He's got this singular focus of, we're gonna get the ghost. You know, there is no ifs, ands, or buts, and I'm going to be as ruthless and cold-blooded as I need to, because that's what needs to happen in order to avenge my Softa's death.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the end for me. This episode was a turning point for me. I as I was reading about it, so I hope y'all know out there that, you know, Apes and I not only watch the stuff, but, you know, we read about it, we like to think about it. And as I was reading about it, I realized some things. Like, so one critic brought up that this is the first episode where we don't see the classic chessboard as part of their opening credits. Which
no. And why is that?
And I don't know why that is. Well, I think I do know why that is, but according to one of the critics, we don't see it. Now, I didn't have time to go back and fact check that, but it makes sense for me, because I think as the creators are mixing fantasy with fact and sort of trying to blur realities, I think it's getting a little far-fetched for me, especially as we go through the synopsis. Look at Apes is just, if we were streaming this live, you would all see Apes just go crazy nuts right now. So
you are out of your effing mind.
I did take a nap. I don't know if that counts or contributed. So we've got the city in a blackout. We know that we experienced a blackout in reality. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And so again, a little bit of these overlays of historical fact, historical fiction, some fantasy thrown in there, and then no one's quite sure why the blackout wasn't followed by an all-out attack, which is what they were assuming was going to happen.
Well, I mean, we know why. That it was just a distraction.
Well, yeah, we know why, but our heroes don't know why, and they need to figure that out. And then they're also there needs to be some closure here. This episode provides us with a little closure, and that's one of my favorite parts of the episode.
One of my absolute favorite scenes of this series happens in this episode.
Okay. Have we gotten there yet? Or
no, not even close. We'll get there.
Okay.
But that's why I like this episode as much as I do, is because of this one specific scene.
Wow, we've got like split. It's a good thing we have a guest on tonight. Because we're like totally split here. So let's talk about Millie for a second. Right. So Millie, our FBI?
Yes. FBI. Yep.
Our FBI agent finally has, you know, Meyer in custody. She's quite sure she's got this thing licked, and she ends up freeing him.
Because she knows that he was right about the Nazi conspiracy.
Yeah, she had enough information. I don't think she had enough information for her to actually build a case herself, but she knew something was going on. And she was trying to uncover it. And of course, a lot of what she was uncovering was on the side of the hunters versus the Nazis. But as she's unveiling all of this through her investigation, she's finding out a lot of stuff tangentially about the Nazis, even though she didn't completely know that they were doing all this big, bad, illegal stuff yet. But she had suspicions of that. And as as time goes on, and then basically I think she was pretty easily convinced of things. Obviously the agent in her, I think, was had some reservations about it and about letting him go, but she went with her gut and she gave it a shot.
Well, also, you have to remember too, she was already on the Nazi trail from the very beginning. And because of what Travis does in the previous episode, after setting fire to Meyer's house and taking the taking some of his personal effects from his secret attic room, you know, she also kind of had him on murder. I mean, it was circumstantial at best, but her boss, not so good of a guy.
Are we sure?
Are we sure? Aren't we at this part yet? Didn't he get a special visitor?
Yeah, he did. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll
okay
get
then.
There. So here's where some things start to unravel for me. First of all, an FBI agent lets a suspect go free. Problem. Then we get our dude Lonnie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who shows up and, oh, he's all better. Oh, that's the magic of film.
No, he made mention about his life being saved and that
he had an owie.
He had an owie, yes.
Really? Yes. He was stabbed. And he really doesn't look like he's dead. So this is guys out there. This is where I'm starting to have some breaks in my own relationship with the show. You can only throw me so many of those things before I start to call foul on those.
But here's the other thing too, though, is that I think we've also got a little bit of a time lapse, because from the time that Murray dies, it's like immediately they're at, you know, they're at his funeral. So it's at least a few days. I don't know what the Jewish law is with regards to having a service and sitting Shiva from the time of the death. But I'm assuming it has to be a day or two for them to at least get the service.
Yeah,
I don't know either.
So, him having an owie is, we don't know how bad, I mean, we don't really know how badly Travis stabbed him.
Travis stabbed him. With a big knife.
Yeah, I guess he missed all internal organs. He's fine. It was,
oh, okay.
Tis but a scratch.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit, it was like, hey, you know, I got stabbed, but I'm good. Everything is fine. Thank you. How are you? It's all disco. It was just that was a bit much. I'll admit that.
Doesn't he have a bit of a drug problem, though? Isn't that like why he's been shunned from Hollywood? Because he's
creepy. I don't know.
He has several problems.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe he's self-medicating in order to get through the day.
Aren't we all?
Maybe.
All right, and then so we've got folks meeting back at the lair. I guess as we're now calling it,
the Bat Cave.
Yes.
Jewish Bat Cave.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then we have this moment where Jonah needs to speak with Mindy, right? And Jonah tells Mindy that Murray has passed, talks to her about the circumstances, and I mean, that to me, Mindy's response is heartbreaking. I mean, as well it should be, but just again witnessing, right, a wife's complete and total breakdown is difficult. It's not a pleasant scene to watch, but
I think the scene later on between the two of them is much more heart-wrenching when he tells her that he said something in Hebrew.
Right. When he tells her his Murray's last words. Yeah.
But then your girl.
Harriet.
So Tim, what do you think about Sister Harriet? We haven't got, everybody out there knows that she's my girl, man.
Oh yeah,
she's my girl.
No, you know, I like Harriet. She's first of all, she's an absolute badass, and I think I love the kind of the duality of her persona. And you know, she's a nun, presumably. We don't know specifically, like factually, that she is. We suspect that she was raised. Well, we know she was raised in a convent. We just don't know how long of her life she spent there. I mean, she could have left there at 12 years old and the whole thing could be a farce. But I love that that's what she portrays herself as. Yet she pretty much she walks her own path. And we do have a lot of mystery about not only her background, but also the people who she happens to communicate with. And I know Robin had some really severe doubts about her. There was a point in time, which, you know, April, you are well aware that Robin was like, Harriet's out. She's done. I'm done with her. I'm not dealing with that. She's dead to me. Like, she was not going to have anything to do with it. And then, you know, when it ended up being a double cross, she's like, oh, yeah, yay, Harriet, I was always rooting for you. Lies. Lies. Lies.
I have a love-hate relationship.
So here's the thing. I don't know if she's actually a nun.
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually know.
Because the conversation when she walks into the CDC to see Patricia,
mm-hmm,
is Patricia having her head down and seeing her walk into the room and saying, I would recognize those hooker heels anywhere.
Exactly. Yes.
Didn't the nuns teach us to be chaste? And then says, I'm really surprised that your band of misfits have not figured you out yet.
Well, and that could mean anything. I mean, there's a lot to figure out about Harry. We're trying to figure things out, and we know, well, we don't know how much they know about her, if anything. But yeah,
yeah, we don't know even what the connection is between her and Meyer. We don't actually know how this merry little band of misfits got together. Those puzzle pieces have not been put in place for us, Apes.
This is true. And this is why I'm kind of also hoping for a season two.
Anyway. So we've got Patricia now revealing what seems to me an emerging plot that this is my third sort of critique of this episode. We're putting together a bioweapon and targeting it towards a particular population. Not sure that I'm buying that connection. You know, all right, so you're going to take a food additive, right?
Corn syrup.
Corn syrup, like a very expensive food additive that we know came about sometime in the 70s when it started to be added to food. And you don't think that people who might be Nazis are eating candy that may or may not have corn syrup in it? Like, there's loose ends here that are just too fantastical for me. And it was a clean show. It was a very clean show up until this point. And I'm starting to see it fray at the edges a little bit.
I have to admit for me that like this big reveal of this biological weapon, and trust me, I love James Bond movies, but this was way too much like James Bond villain reveal that there's this even more diabolical plot than like, hey, we want to kill all the Jews. It's now we're going to like try to eliminate a good portion of society because we're going to poison some certain food. So that was a bit much. It was an interesting plot twist. And it makes a great setup for the next episode.
So, okay. Granted, more people will probably be eating it than they anticipated. However, my thought is the reason that they put it in corn syrup is because corn syrup goes into processed foods. Who eats more processed foods than anybody? The food insecure. The people who are low income where processed foods are cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Inner cities. Places where fresh food aren't necessarily either a viable option or are cost prohibitive. So they're targeting that population specifically. And so, yeah, so it's in processed foods, and I think about it. The colonel is a, I'm not giving anything away here, military strategist, we'll say. So anybody who is killed by the corn syrup outside of their targeted group is really just
collateral damage.
Yes, thank you. That was the term I was looking for. Especially when you think about the fact that this corn syrup and the foods that it was being put into were being sent specifically to certain areas, I think.
Yeah, again, they start to lose me a little bit. And I don't have a problem with the bio weapon, right? I get it. It lays dormant. And it's... Think about this. We were recording this during, you know, the height of a pandemic here in the United States for, a virus that lays, that can go undetectable, right, for a long period of time. And we're not actually sure about that. So kudos to timing, I guess, out in movie land. So an undetectable pathogen that lies dormant and then kills very quickly, I believe. I'm not sure if it kills very quickly, but there is no cure.
Right.
right? That's sort of the idea here. So yeah, pretty ingenious supervillain plot. Yep. But there it is, apes. There's my 2 cents about that particular plot twist.
Okay. I didn't think it was a plot twist, like, in the typical sense. I mean, we knew that they were up to something, and it stands to reason that they're going to try and kill as many people as possible, because they wanted to beat their high score. I mean,
that's funny.
So now we're playing Donkey Kong here, really? Is that what we're doing?
Well,
I get it.
They're evil. They're awful. They're awful. Hello, Penny. So then we have we get back to the office, and the colonel meets with Travis and Tobias, and all of a sudden now Travis is in the doghouse, and she orders them to once again go and kill Meyer, and this time Tobias is to oversee Travis, because Travis can't do anything right, apparently.
And this just did not end well.
This is my favorite scene. I absolutely loved this scene. So Travis confesses to Tobias that he's the one who killed Tobias's brothers, and then smashes his head in over and over again into the dashboard, and then sings a little ditty.
yeah, like totally not even bothered by it. I guess it was kind of necessary for his own survival.
He is actually revealing himself to be a better
sociopath.
Yeah. absolutely, he's a sociopath. But like, he's like the worst kind of sociopath.
There's good sociopaths,
right? But he's becoming. All right, everybody, don't. You know, he's becoming likable. I'm sorry. He's like a vicious animal that is kind of cute and you want to pet it, and then you realize it's just bitten your hand off and you're like, oh, that's okay. I probably put my hand in your mouth at the wrong time. It's okay.
Okay. I mean,
what do you think about? Don't you like
So that? I've dated one of them, actually.
That's not me.
No.
I kind of love Travis. He's kind of one of my favorite characters.
This is why April and I do this show. Right here. See that? There's love right there.
It's also disturbing.
He's just, I don't know. He's a good.
Good what?
He's a.
There's no good word that follows this. Like, aside from good Nazi?
No.
Good.
No, he's not a well-written villain, I would say. He's cartoonish, and that's what I enjoy about him.
Yeah.
He's cartoony. Yeah. And the fact that as he's murdering Tobias, he's singing Paul Anka.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these little moments in the show when, you know, the irony comes to the fore, right? And the sheer audacity of this particular character. But I like his audacity. Mm-hmm. And I like that he's pure. When you see him come on the screen, you know what you're getting.
That's true.
Right? You're getting a self-centered, narcissistic.
Sociopath. Sociopath.
Who's, you know, he's cute. He looks lovable unless you poke him. my poor husband is going to sleep with one eye open tonight.
I wouldn't say he's lovable.
Yeah, no, he's not like cuddly. That's not something I would do.
I mean,
no.
I'll give you good looking. I wouldn't throw him out of bed for eating crackers, but
he would do worse to you for eating crackers. So Travis is again, you know, total badass in this episode. I do wonder if Travis is ever going to realize that, and I don't know, this might have to be answered in season two, is ever going to realize that he's actually forever going to be an outsider.
Is he, though?
I don't know. It's an unanswered question for me. But it seems to me that if you're not born into the clan, you can't really stay there for long. You can get kicked to the curb pretty quickly.
Yeah, but
well, and that's kind of his thing, is that he's having to prove himself because he is an outsider.
Yes.
And obviously in this particular action, he had to eliminate the competition.
Here's the thing, though, because she was ready to kick Tobias to the curb when Travis came along.
Yes.
And
but then was willing to kick Travis to the curb.
And Tobias and his brothers were born into the plan.
Yeah.
As we'll find out in the next episode.
I also think that it's misguided. I mean, he thinks that he's thinking that, you know, individual actions can ingratiate himself with the colonel, or eliminating the competition is going to, you know, just clearly put him there. And she has proven herself to be very, very judgmental, that, you know, it doesn't take much to get out of her good graces. So, I mean, all the things that we described about him are very accurate. He's also an idiot.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's not, he's obviously trying to, you know, he is joining this cause and working on their behalf, but also within it, simply his recognition of social status is completely non-existent.
But
yeah, but he's attached himself to a group that is very much like him. I mean, he found his niche. He's not out there looking for a family. He found it, man.
True.
But also, before he was brought into the fold, wasn't he kind of just working as, like, a mercenary?
Yeah, he's a mercenary. So, he was an orphaned. I don't know this, you know, I'm just saying, the way his character has been presented to us is he was this, you know, sort of orphaned, cute little wolf cub who now can bite your face off. You know what? So there's that. So wait, let's talk a little bit about apes. Let's talk a little bit about who returns to the fold here.
Roxy.
I'm so glad that Roxy's back. I love Roxy. I mean, she's the quintessential 70s stereotype black woman. And I love everything about her. I think she's fantastic. I love her.
Her line to her daughter, when Meyer says, you know, you really need to come back. You need to come back in. And her daughter goes, did he just ask you to save the world? Are you a superhero? And she goes, mm-hmm. I am a strong black woman. Superheroes got nothing on me. I was like, yes.
That's right.
I love her.
That's exactly right. She's fantastic.
She is. She's not cuddly. She's not cuddly like Travis. No, nope, not at all.
No, I totally think she's cuddly.
See, for me, she's very cold. For me, Sister Harriet is more cuddly than Roxy.
No.
I'm just going to stick with Jonah.
I have a strange taste in women. Strange taste in women. What can I say? But she to me is a very standoffish, cold character, and I've never really known where to place her in this pantheon.
She's taking care of her daughter. My guess is that she was much more embroiled in this kind of stuff, whether it was with this group or it was maybe a Black rights activist group or something like that, that we kind of got hints of in the early episodes. Then her getting a daughter has gotten her mentally to want to distance herself from these things because she wants to be there for her daughter. Like the little glimpses that we've gotten of her make that really, really apparent to me. But then, you know, when it matters, she also realizes that she on behalf of her daughter, she needs to fight. That's what I get from her.
Yeah. And Meyer actually brings that to this very obvious sentence when he turns to her and he says, you know, you and your daughter are not going to be here if you don't do this.
Yeah.
So he makes it personal for her. And remember, this is a time, you know, in the 60s and the 70s when we were all about making the political personal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so this is the driver for her. He hit the right note for Roxy to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she only left because she was involved in that explosion and said, I didn't sign up to get blown up.
Right.
So prior to that, you know, she's had this daughter for presumably 6 or 7 years. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So her having this daughter didn't really seem like it was much of a consideration until she almost died.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a big wake up call for her.
And do we know where the father is? We know that they parted, but I've lost track of him a little bit.
He's a Black rights activist.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's the one who we saw in the first few episodes, right? They like bumped into each other on the street. Yeah. And I think that was the father.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the daughter, I believe she called him daddy, and he's like, okay, you go over here. I think they were kind of like doing a handoff.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
Okay.
Go on.
Go ahead.
I was gonna just move on to the next grouping.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So
this is rough.
What's rough?
This whole thing with Meyer, the flashback.
I was gonna do the Meyer thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's fine.
I want to do the Millie thing first because the Meyer Jonah story is pretty significant. Okay. So Millie, after attending the funeral, goes to the hospital and sees her girlfriend, well, ex-girlfriend, and they have a conversation, basically kind of pouring her heart out, and then her dad walks in and is like, oh, nice of you to show up. You don't show up for days and... You know, your mother's sick, and mom.
And she gives like the most horrible excuse of like, I'm an FBI agent. I was doing stuff. Like that was so dismissive of. That was just bad.
See,
I was doing stuff.
I'm of a different mind. I think her dad. I mean, granted, you know, her mom is very ill, but. I think her dad is being very dismissive of the importance of his daughter's job and that she can't just drop everything, you know, to visit every day when she's being sent all over the country to chase leads.
True, true.
You know, so I don't think, I think they're both, I mean, her excuse was weak, but I think her dad was kind of being a jerk. Rightfully so. I mean, his wife is very
ill. Yeah. The thing is that I think that they're really both right. You know, I mean, he was right in saying something to her and being upset about her not being around, and she was also right in saying, hey, you know, look, I was busy. I've been, I mean, she was down in Florida. She's been all over the place. Yeah.
But don't forget, she also is trying desperately to keep a distance, a healthy distance between her professional life, which she is realizing is very much going to probably kill her at some point. And the people that she loves, you know, that her dad doesn't understand her is completely understandable. You know, she is at the forefront of a movement where not only are women trying to be recognized in the workplace, just women in general, but now Black women, and a Black woman who's a lesbian, who's in an agency that looks nothing like her.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't understand her struggle. I understand the history behind the struggle that she is representing on the screen. And so, you know, I'm a little happy that they're not dwelling on that. I think they're handling the Millie mom, dad, girlfriend relationship pretty well. But you know, my penchant for backing away from anything that gets sappy and
well, but I don't think any of it even got sappy. I mean, even when her mom told her, you know, hey, love is love and, you know, you need to be happy. I don't think there's anything about that was sappy. I mean, I think that acceptance was really important to her.
Yep.
And it was real meaningful.
Yeah. And so, like I'm saying, I think it was well done and just enough. Apes.
Yeah. I like that her mother, her mother kind of called her out and was like, you know, I've been around a long time. I've known you longer than you've known yourself. I know what's going on and I'm cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, hold on to that love. Don't run away from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But if we think about the time that this is being done, that's a remarkable statement.
Oh, sure.
It's especially remarkable considering the community and the homophobia that, you know, is very prevalent, even in 2020 in the African American community.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So there's Millie.
Yes. So we start to get a little bit of closure on Millie. At least when it comes to this part of herself that she's been so desperate to hide from everybody. Cause I mean, obviously she can't be out at work either. Because that would not be a good situation. But do we want to talk about Ruth and Ruth or not Ruth? What's her name? Mindy and Murray.
All right, so let's tackle that. A little bit of, you know, we were saying in the last show how they've sort of backed off of the stop what's going on here and go into this caricature crazy mode. Well, they backed off of that a little bit, but they give us something, I think, a little bit better.
Mm.
And they give us a very nice glimpse, a very nice fantasy glimpse of what life is like after you leave this planet. And I don't know, Apes, I think it was really well done.
Yes.
I think it was just enough. And I think it was fitting for the particular characters. So what we're talking about here is Mindy is left alone, right? Chases her daughter away. Jonah finally leaves. She's left alone at her kitchen table. Yes. And
yeah,
Murray shows up, like Ruth does for Jonah. Murray shows up and, they are reunited as a family. And, And so we see this beautiful garden with Murray taking Mindy to be reunited with their son. And it's a very touching moment.
Yeah, yes. It really is. It was a real meaningful interlude, and it wasn't relevant to the story, but it was relevant to her character, and it was kind of a closure that she absolutely needed, and so I thought it was a nice little an interlude in the story.
So I hold this kind of belief that they show in the show. Where when you dream about a loved one that has passed, you're not actually dreaming about them. They've actually come to visit you, you know, in your dream, and they're there with you. And that's something that I've always held, and I hold that belief. And so for this, I feel like they were doing the same kind of thing where, you know, Murray was actually visiting with Mindy and was there with her at that time, and, you know, did bring her to Aaron, because he then gives her Aaron's, you know, final wish, which was to show Moritz mercy.
Right. So as a reminder, this is the Nazi
wedding gift
soldier. Right. This is the wedding gift. This is the Nazi soldier who murdered Aaron, who Sister Harriet gift, and all of this time, through all of these two episodes, this man has been tied to a chair in Mindy's basement, and we see that he has defecated it's just in a horrible state when Mindy walks back down there, and I can't believe nobody kind of remembered that he was there.
And it's been like one of the funniest things, because like to me watching it, every once in a while I forget that he's there, and then, you know, they go to him and I'm like, oh yeah, that dude's there. And then there's other times where like we haven't seen him for a while, and I'm like, is that dude still in the basement? Like, did they, I like have to start thinking back, did they ever resolve that? Did they off him? What did it? No, he's still there. He's still there. Hanging out. Yeah.
But also, she had people over. Like, her and her family are sitting shiva, and people are in the house, and, you know, eating snacks, and nobody.
Never mind the Nazi in the basement.
That's right.
There are a lot of people in that household for probably a number of days.
This is true.
Yeah.
And so
she lasted a long time.
And so she does show him mercy. She, you know, she shoots him and ends his life swiftly. And that kind of gives us, I mean, that really gives us the closure with regards to Murray too, because this was more his albatross than hers, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it was Murray coming to grips, right, with Aaron, having a little bit of Aaron reinfused in him. He gets to spend eternity now with his son, in the physical state where he left him. And I think it was a little bit of Murray too. It wasn't just Aaron saying, all right, enough is enough.
Yeah.
So.
And then we have another fourth wall break, which we've kind of missed. I don't think we had one in the last episode.
We didn't.
No.
This awful, awful fantasy game show. Why does everyone hate Jews?
Why do we hate Jews? Yeah.
This is the most uncomfortable part of this. This was cringeworthy. This was like awful for me. Again, the little bit of little back to unraveling for me, but I don't know. What do you?
Well, I that's the whole reason why they did it. You know, I mean, it's supposed, I mean, there's a lot in this series that is very much supposed to be disturbing and uncomfortable.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have Taika Waititi as a producer, you're going to get really weird interludes like this that are completely unexpected. And it's like a lot of the comedy in this show is like a modern take on Mel Brooks. It's that poignant. It's that much in your face. It's, you know, they are, it's very self-deprecating kind of stuff, but it's also, it's not slapstick self-deprecating. It's really, really grounded, real self-deprecating kind of stuff. That's like, wow. Yeah. Here's, you know, I mean, that little game show thing was like the top 20 of why so many facets of society historically have hated Jews. And I think it's one of those good little nuggets, like as a reminder in this show, that there's a lot of people that hate Jews simply because they're Jews, right? You know, just like there's people who hate black people because they're black. There's people, I mean, name whatever it is, and people hate them because they're different. And that's the most appalling thing about society.
Yes. I agree. And I think I love the way that it's done too. And, you know, when they end the game show, you have the game show host turning and saying, if you know somebody who can come play this game, you know, put them in contact. Really, you might know somebody. And then they, like, mm-hmm. go through, you know, they might make an offhanded comment, or, you know, or they might just say it to themselves. And it's like, yes, this is I like the way that they break the fourth wall with these over the top interludes.
Yeah.
And the game show really is a visual and auditory demonstration of how racism works.
Oh, totally. And how you get these prejudices and stereotypes that perpetuate themselves through society and through families and that kind of stuff, because, you know, people are around these things and they hear these reasons.
Yeah.
And eventually it just becomes part of them, and that becomes ingrained in them. And like, there are certain facets of society that, like, you almost feel bad for them because they're kind of practically predisposed to this, because you know that that's the environment that they're raised in. They're raised in an environment to hate other people. And you know, because either their family is like that, or just the people around them are, and it's really unfortunate.
Okay, so we have our main focus of the episode, which is the Meyer and Jonah saga, and we find out a little bit more about Meyer's backstory and why he stayed away for all of those years. And it was because and let's not forget that the wolf has taken a shine to Ruth, and she has rebuffed his advances. So now he's out to get Meyer in order to, I think, maybe get Ruth to come over to his favor.
Yeah, claim Ruth as his own. Sure.
And so Meyer relays the story of how in the middle of the night he's woken from his slumber and taken out to the woods and given a gun and told he has to choose either killing an innocent man or the wolf will kill Ruth. And because he's so in love with Ruth, he executes an innocent man, and it just keeps going one after another, and kills 11 total. And because of this, is filled with such remorse that he, you know, feels unworthy of Ruth. And when they get out, he stays away. But we're on a Nazi hunt, and they are looking for one of the big gets for America. Nazi rocket scientist turned NASA superstar and American celebrity, Wernher von Braun.
Mm-hmm.
Who apparently had died years earlier, although Meyer does not believe this to be true.
So help me with this. So now in this hunt, and here again is where I get a little bit of, this episode was really difficult for me. There were so many pits to fall into. And here's another one. All of the sudden, we get a Meyer counterpart, right? On the other side of this question.
Yes.
And it's just, it's like all of the sudden, it's like oh, by the way, Robin, here's, you know, the better angel of you that I used to know. And, you know, blah. It's like, wait, really? What has just happened here? I don't know. Where did that leave you guys? It just left me kind of cold.
I think a lot of this is really interesting storytelling in the depth that they go from plot point to plot point. And I mean, it kind of, like you said, it's, there's like these pits of stories, these rabbit holes that you end up going down into because they're so immersive. They're very, very intense. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, they're not isolated from everything else because obviously it all has a flow to it. But it seems the writers and the actors throw everything that they possibly have of themselves into these moments, into these particular scenes. And it's sometimes very surprising.
So I don't find anything particularly wrong with this situation because this guy that they're going to, Simon Wiesenthal, played by Judd Hirsch, he's a lawyer, and he's made it his mission to get compensation and go after these Nazis the legal way. You know, last week we were talking about whether or not this is justice or revenge, and now our waters are getting muddied because up until this episode, you know, we're thinking that this is justice what they're doing, and now you have a crusader who is actually going for the legal justice because he knows that the Nazis were being brought to the U.S. And getting these comfortable lives, and he was going after them civilly for damages. So I don't find an issue with him showing up, especially when we find out that he knew Ruth, and Ruth, you know, they went to him before to get intel, and Ruth stole files from him. You know, I don't particularly love that he said to Jonah, you know, you're desecrating your grandmother's memory by doing this, when it's like, well, who the hell are you? I've never met you before, but you know my grandmother so well. You know, all these, it's interesting to see Jonah's story because all of a sudden there is this entirely different facet of his grandmother's life that he knew nothing about. And he's got all of these people who, you know, have known her for years and years and years, and she has completely sheltered him.
Yes, but also, this is also a hero's journey for Jonah.
Absolutely.
So this is a classic meta-narrative of the hero's journey. And part of that hero's journey is being woke at some point, right? This is Jonah being woke. Like,
yeah.
Gee, grandma wasn't out bowling. I don't know. Nazis. And, you know? But don't we as children all have that moment that where we go, oh, this is real. What I was doing there yesterday, not so much.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's a part of this is why humans are doomed, because we all have to repeat the mistakes of the species over and over and over. Evolution is lost on us sometimes, but and this is, again, I just found it like it was dropped in there and then it was let go just as quickly. I feel like maybe they could have gotten the intel other places, but this was kind of a convenient plot point for the writers.
Okay.
So I didn't learn too much more about Ruth, except that now, in addition to being a stone cold killer and brilliant strategist, she also is a thief. Well, okay. Go Ruth.
I mean, none of it really surprised me.
No.
I mean, that because they had to bring additional connections into this whole story. And so, yeah, it didn't surprise me.
I do like the conversation. So after, you know, while they're staking out Von Braun's residence, he and Jonah finish their conversation because he was starting to tell Jonah the story at Mindy's house and said, you know what, no, now's not the time. We'll get to this later. And
right,
he has this monologue. I became a different creature. The wolf had won, and I never saw the sunrise again. It cost me my world, but it turned me toward the man I was destined to be. Now in darkness, I could protect the light. I became the night so that the day could live. That is the mark of a hero, Jonah, not the one who does what is right, but one who does what is necessary. And he, you know, emphasizes this point that Meyer is Batman and Jonah is his Robin or the light. And Jonah is basically to act as his tether and keep him from really getting completely sucked into the dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all very fitting. I mean, the whole speech that he gave about being in the dark, I mean, yeah, that was absolutely a Batman thing.
Well,
and it works.
But Jonah works. Is also obsessed with comic books.
With comics, yeah.
With comic books, yeah.
Yeah, so it grounded it for him. Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're going to seduce somebody like Meyer is seducing Jonah, you've got to get a hook. He found his hook. He's building his narrative around those hooks. Meyer is a very crafty little character.
Yes, but now
he's brilliant,
hook.
But he's also damaged. I mean, from the whole, it's like not only did he have this experience in the concentration camp, but then the whole story that he told about shooting those men. I mean, you then realized truly how damaged the guy is, and how much the wolf was responsible for that.
But back to Robin's point, he doesn't need a hook. Jonah recognizes he recognized the familiar aspect with this group well before we found out that Meyer is his grandfather.
True.
So yeah, now that
but
he's,
at any moment Jonah will absolutely give it up. If Meyer wasn't constantly reeling him in, Jonah is always been on the fence, and even in this righteous indignation that he has allowed to well up within him, I really do feel like if Meyer stopped reeling him in, that he'd be like, all right, I got my friends at home who need me, you know, I got to start living. Sort of like Roxy.
Yeah, but I feel like now that he knows that Meyer is his grandfather, I don't think he needs to be reeled in anymore. I think he's bought in. He knows that his softa was up to, and he's going to finish, he's going to finish her work. And great, now he's got Grandpa by his side.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that him finding out, A, that Meyer is his grandfather, and B, the reason that he stayed away, I think the hooks are in.
So, any final thoughts on this particular episode? Did we miss anything?
Biff!
Talk about reeling her in. I got my hooks in her, people. You should have seen the arms go up. It was great. Oh,
Biff.
April, tell us about Biff.
So, we open with Biff.
We love Biff.
We do. He's so messed up.
We love
Biff. Biff trying to dispose of his mother-in-law's body. And the police are beating down his door, so he goes on the lam. They now know that he is wanted. Well, he is now wanted for the massacre that occurred at his home. And he arrives at the home of none other.
Millie's innocent boss.
Than Millie's boss, Grimsby. He's not innocent. He's not.
No. There's no way he's innocent. No.
Poor guy.
He's buds with a Nazi and a really bad Nazi. I mean, no Nazi is a good Nazi, but a really bad Nazi.
If there was a scale of Nazis, this guy is certainly toward the bad end of that.
I mean, his nickname was the Butcher. How much worse could you get?
Well, I think Grimsby was caught between a rock and a hard place, and I think he is a character that is literally caught between a rock and a hard place.
No, because Grimsby knows who he is.
Yeah, I understand that, but he was also ordered to reload, to give this person a brand new identity, knowing who he is.
Yeah.
By virtue of his job.
Mm-hmm.
So how about that, being caught between a rock and a hard place?
Yeah.
Oh, gee, I've heard that before. I was just following orders.
This is the personification of that. I'm not defending Grimsby, please. If you're going to write letters, direct them to Tim.
Me? What did I do?
You're sitting here.
I'm just a guest.
No, all questions, comments, and concerns regarding the way that this show is written go straight to Jeff Bezos. But we also need to mention, I mean, obviously we'll get more into the Grimsby Biff situation in the penultimate episode next week. But we do have to just make mention that they do find Von Braun very much alive.
Mm-hmm.
And do their thing and tie him up. And Jonah goes a little ham on him and electrocutes him a bit.
Like a lot. Over and over again, which I'll tell you, I wasn't really all that upset about. I mean, we're torturing a Nazi for information about a biological weapon that's going to kill a whole crap ton of people. I'm cool with that. You do what you got to do. I mean, you got to have some flexible morality in this whole thing. And they're like, yeah, well, no, we Myers. Point of view on this was, well, we can torture him, but we can't torture him that much. Come on.
And Jonah's like, look, Grandpa. Okay, Boomer. I got
it. Yeah, but it was more Joe that was concerned.
Yeah. True. Yeah, Joe actually flipped out.
At Jonah's behavior. Because, just as I said, the hooks are in. He is he is 100% on board with this plan now, and he proved it by the way that he, you know, decided, okay, well, you've talked. I'm still going to electrocute you because that's what we do here.
And we're going to kill us some Nazis.
And we end that whole scene with Jonah walking out of the house with this look on his face as Safda is standing yelling no.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts. I mean,
he definitely went to the dark side.
He did.
But that was foreshadowed. That was foreshadowed when Jonah was asleep in the backseat of the car and there was an exchange between Meyer and Joe, and something about Meyer saying he looks just like his Safda, or he reminds me so much of Ruth. And Joe says, no, I don't see that. All I see is you.
Mm. Yeah.
True.
Right. So we might not be paying attention too much to the foreshadowing, but there's not until we get to episode 10 are we really going to be allowed to, you know, just sort of out with it. But there's a lot going on here subtextually that I think this series, after it's all said and done here, deserves a second watch. You know, just all the way through to sand off the corners. And I don't know, maybe I'll pick up some clues about Sister Harriet, which I don't have yet. So overall, I give the episode sort of a meh. April?
Like I said, I don't think it's one of the best episodes they've done. I actually hold that for the final episode because I love the final episode.
Half with your face.
Tim, have you finished the series?
You.
No.
I am in lockstep with my lovely wife in how we're watching it.
Okay.
So you're our guest. We want to get your feel of it overall. Is this a recommend for us out there?
For this particular episode?
For this series.
Oh, for the series? Yeah, you know, overall, I think the series is good. I've been talking it up on Random Chatter. We do a segment called What Were We Watching? And so I've been talking it up on there quite a bit to folks and also over on our Discord channel. I enjoy it, even though it has gone to a couple of strange places and kind of a couple of things are a little excessive. I really like the writing. I like the cast. I love the talent and the acting that they're bringing to it. I really like the kind of the crazy kooky interludes with the little musicals and the game show and that kind of stuff. I think that those are, they're incredibly poignant and they're meaningful. They're not just, well, they're silly things superficially. There's actually a lot of depth to them. Either in terms of individual characters or, you know, the much broader concepts like the, you know, why do we hate Jews game show? I like it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to seeing the season finale on this. And I'm still curious to see if they're going to go another season.
Well, having watched this series, I will be disappointed if we don't get a second season just because of the way that they end things. And I'm not going to say anything more. Just that it would kind of suck if we don't get a second season. tied up enough that if they don't, but really it needs a season too.
Yeah, it seems to me, I mean, even though we haven't seen the finale, and certainly they may achieve the goal that's in front of them in the finale, but when you've developed these characters so well, and there's still a lot of mystery mm-hmm. left to these characters, there's a lot more to tell about them, and they're hunting Nazis. There's bound to be more Nazis out there to hunt. or other bad people. Maybe they take on some other thing that they're going to get rid of. I don't know. They're gonna, you know,
it's more
something
Nazis.
Else. there's all sorts of bad people out there for them to be going after. And, you know, I would love for them to have like this little association with the FBI kind of on the side, maybe feeding them some information very unofficially. There's so many great directions they could go with this. I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, I enjoy the show very much. I think we need to have Tim back for the final episode because just based on Robin's reaction to this episode versus your reaction to this episode, I think I'm gonna need you back for the episode 10.
So this is the part of the show, Tim, where I turn to April and I say, "So what have you been watching?"
Besides,
April was the one who mentioned a tiger prawn, whatever.
Tiger King.
Tiger King.
Tiger King is the greatest train wreck ever. have you watched it, Tim?
No. Have not.
Oh, do yourself a favor. It's ridiculous. So besides playing incessant amounts of Animal Crossing, I readily admit it. Everybody I know that plays it has this same ridiculous addiction.
True.
Yes.
But the only other thing that I've been watching that's on the side of ridiculous is the latest season of Nailed It.
Nailed It. What's that?
Oh, man. So Nailed It is a baking competition.
A baking competition.
It's a baking competition where they bring on three home cooks, home bakers who are terrible and have no right being in the kitchen. and give them impossible things to bake in a very ambitious amount of time. And see who can come the closest to what it looks like and tastes okay. And it's hosted by Nicole Byer, who's a comedian, and Jacques Torres, who is a French chocolatier. And then they have like a guest judge every episode, and it's so stupid. my best friend and I tend to watch it when we're together, and I can watch hours of it, and she gets so angry and has to turn it off because it's just, they're terrible. They have no business being in the kitchen, and these people think that they're okay at what they do. And the number of times I've seen them spit something out because it's terrible.
So, ladies and gentlemen in audience land, April is watching Nailed It, so you don't have to.
Oh, but I highly recommend it. So, audience, all please right, give us some other recommendations, because let me tell you, it is a trash TV desert right now.
Yeah, you know, and it's going to be tough for a little while. I mean, we've got some shows that are seeing, you know, the stuff that was kind of at the end of their production run for the season. In fact, even some of them didn't get to finish, like, you know, The Walking Dead. They didn't get to finish their season finale. There's a couple of other shows, same thing. This summer is going to be rough in terms of TV. There's going to be very, very little new stuff out there.
You know,
very
what they
little.
Are filming, though, which I'm very excited about, is season two of, and I can't remember what the thing is called now. It's the mini golf competition.
What?
Oh, I can't wait to talk about this one. I'll talk about this one next week. It is a mini golf competition that Steph Curry created the mini golf course for.
And really?
Rob Riggle is one of the commentators. It is hilarious.
No kidding.
It's mini golf.
All right.
And basically like Wipeout in. Oh my God.
It's yeah. Okay. I would give that a shot.
It's amazing.
I would get. So they're doing their second season. So there was a first season.
There was a first season. It was on this summer. And
okay. Where can it be found?
ABC.
Okay.
Holy moly. Thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
No, EJ just texted me. It's called Holy Moly.
Okay. Okay. Holy is in the hole in one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I was on TikTok because I spent a lot of time on TikTok, and one of the production assistants or writers or something was talking about how she was on set and, you know, all the precautions they were taking because of Corona, but they were still filming. So.
I must tell you, audience, I don't actually think April sleeps. Like, I know how hard she works at work. And then I hear about Animal Crossing, and then I hear about TikTok, and I hear about all this stuff. I'm like, I don't think she's – like, I took a nap this afternoon. And I don't think Apes ever actually closes her eyes. So
I do sleep, actually. Just not a ton.
It's actually – she just, like, mixes the cocaine into her coffee.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like 7 or 17 of those a day, she gets through it just fine. Yeah.
One cup of coffee and I get a good 6 hours of sleep and I'm pretty good.
All right. Thank you, April.
Thank you,
ladies.
Robin.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Tim.
This was great. I love podcasting with you. And you.
Thanks. Freaking chopped liver over here. I'm only the co-host.
We just got our logo up there on TeePublic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you can now grab some TeePublic. Don't you dare, April. April. Don't you dare.
Not saying anything.
So it's up there on TeePublic. You can find us in Discord in the Stream Smarties channel. Please, please, please let us know what our next endeavor should be. That's a wrap?
Yeah,
that's
a wrap. So
tell Tim. I have not told him.
Tell Tim?
That okay. You hate.
Oh, should I pause? Oh, wait, hold on. Let's do our sign-off before we get into that. So be safe, be careful,
and be kind to each other.
Stay home.